Listen to these people, Ricky. You're a winner. You got the gift. Always remember, if you ain't first, you're last.
If you ain't first, you're last.
It's the DHL champ in the building. The voice is back. This is what you asked for. And what you asked for is what you shall receive. Nothing less than excellence. Championship pedigree. They should just name the damn trophy after me, you know what I'm saying? Because I am not surrendering. The belt will stay on my waist. It ain't going nowhere. We back here for our 17th season in the DHL, and what a beauty of a season it's been so far. So let's step into the year 2024 and get her done.
Well, I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence, and nobody can hang with my stuff. You know, I'm just a big, hairy American winning machine. If you ain't first, you're last. You know what I'm talking about? That phrase, trademark, not to use the other position, Ricky Bobby Ng.
Man, it's been so long. It has been so long. And I know I let that intro run a little long, but I had to make sure you guys felt that. But I feel at home already. I'm glad to be filling your eardrums with the nonsense of the voice. Letting y'all know my interest, what's going on. Hope everybody had a happy new year, Merry Christmas, all that good stuff. I appreciate everybody that's reached out, either through text or in the league chat, asking where the podcast's at. Real quick, to clear things up, the reason I didn't do a podcast was because I was in my feelings. You know, I feel I do a good job of trying to be objective as I can be, do a lot of research before I come on here, run my mouth. And I felt I was doing all this work and I wasn't getting nothing back on my investment. And before y'all start thinking, boo-hoo voice, anytime one of y'all spend a couple hours and make some type of content, I'm getting text messages, I'm seeing posts in the league chat, on the message board, to go view your creation, view what you wrote up, and get feedback. And that's when you guys just spend a couple hours once or twice a year doing something, making some content for the league. So for all the work that I do to only get nice pod, shit, you can miss me with that, you know what I'm saying? So on top of that, you look at Yahoo this season, they took away the message board, which to me will only give you guys more of an excuse not to provide any opinions on the podcast. It just solidified my stance to be like, these dudes can entertain themselves this season. Anywho, with that being said, even though I haven't been making podcasts, I have been keeping tabs, tracking data, all that nerd shit that I usually do.
Nerd alert!
So, best believe, I got the stats, I got the information, I've been paying attention. And the problem with that is, when you don't do a podcast, and there hasn't been anything that's dropped in the first 10 weeks of the season, there's just like so much material that I want to cover. And I'm trying to, you know, not go all the way far back to everything that's happened in the first 10 weeks. Try to stay as current as I can and stay on topic with recent things that have happened in our league and in the DHL. But I do, a big but, I do have to step back real quick and address the elephant in the room, which is the narcissicity of this league, I guess, if that's a word, is just ludicrous. Like, y'all focus so much on yourselves that when you're playing an opponent, you're not even aware of what your opponent is doing. You're just focused on your squad that much. And there's a couple managers that I'm specifically talking about. Like, we are 10 weeks into the season, halfway through the fantasy regular season, and there's still managers that either haven't remembered, haven't realized that we voted and passed adding an IL slot to rosters that was supposed to be implemented this season. This is why I always urge you guys to view the Yahoo basketball platform on your desktop. Because you got managers like, I ain't worried about nothing out here. Talking about they always seeing everything. They super focused on the league. They check so many times a day. And basically every week, but the first week of the season, I ain't worried about nothing, played an opponent that used the IL plus slot in their roster. And if Varus would have just took 5 minutes out of his day to view the matchup on his computer, or, you know, even if he would have just scrolled all the way down his opponent's roster on the app, he would have saw that everybody he played was using the IL spot. And he was sitting there with Zach LaVine, Ja Morant, all types of injured folks on his squad that he could have put on that IL slot. He was just sitting there wasting away, working extra hard to not drop these guys. And it's like, come on, bro. You check the league almost as much as I do. There's no way you should have missed this. And I understand that I'm a nerd. You know, before every season, no matter what league I'm in, I always go to the league settings. I like to verify what the rules are. That way, personally, I like to make sure I can manipulate them to my advantage. So I'm always checking the league settings. I'm checking the commissioner notes tab, seeing if there's any notifications there. You know, quick tip, just go to your computer, click through the tabs. There's lots of resources available to you, lots of tools on the desktop version or the computer version of the Yahoo basketball platform that you guys can use to help yourselves out as far as seeing what type of runs players are on, getting consensus on players to see what trends are going on, to see maybe if you're not paying attention to something that you might have missed. Simple things like sorting tools when you're trying to add drop a player. Like just use the computer every once in a while. I like the phone. It's easy. It's convenient. You know, you don't have to step out of the room or go somewhere else away from the TV because your phone is normally always by you. I get that. But like, use the tools that are available to you guys. Enough on that though. Let's get to some NBA news. And in week 10, there was a lot of things going on. We started off the week, of course, with the Christmas slate of games. And the league, to me, did a good job of predicting which teams would be interesting when setting up the schedule. I opted out of the Philadelphia-Miami game, and that's only because Jimmy Butler and Joel Embiid were missing that game. So I took that as my little time to kind of relax, take a little nap, get myself recharged. But honestly, when I caught up with the game the next day on League Pass, it was an entertaining game. So for guys like me that like basketball more than they like football, it was a great day. I enjoyed all the games. I read this article that stated the ratings during Christmas slate of games were down. And honestly, I think that's why things like the in-season tournament will be crucial with the growth of the NBA. Because, you know, football has extended their season. They will be encroaching forever on Christmas Day games for the most part. Of course, next year, Christmas is on a Tuesday, so we'll have Christmas all to ourselves. Well, NBA fans will have Christmas all to themselves. But things like the in-season tournament are especially necessary to kind of bring in the casual fan and kind of make sure that we're a year-round league, kind of just like how football is. Even though football has the off-season, we're always talking about trades, training camp, all this other kind of stuff. NBA is never going to defeat football in its popularity, but there is room for improvement and growth. Now, there's a saying that says, all publicity is good publicity. And that was never more true than the negative headlines concerning the Detroit Pistons and their eventual 27-game losing streak. That speaks truth into that saying. So, you got people on my local news channel that seem to have no interest in sports or basketball speaking on the losing streak of the Detroit Pistons. And that really made all the games for Detroit in Week 10 must-see TV. And as crazy as it sounds, all those games, they really had like a playoff level type of intensity. Now, I don't say this with much conviction, but I will admit I was one of those people that was questioning if Detroit should be building their squad around Cade. Is Cade Cunningham that dude? You know, because if he was that good, how do you not luck into a win? 27 straight, like at some point you are what your record says you are. And I hear you from the peanut gallery yelling out, man, how can you say that about a guy that averaged 34 points, 6 rebounds, 8.7 assists, 1.7 steals, 1 block, and 3 three-pointers made at 64% while shooting 57% from the field on 21 attempts and 88% from the charity stripe? How can you say that? And I get that. He balled out in week 10. He was trying to carry that team to wins. There is no doubt about that. He elevated his game. But he did not. I shouldn't say that. I just feel like if you're elevating the play of the players around you, you would have been able to get a win without the pressure of it not having to be around solidifying or capturing that losing streak for yourself. And I also get the argument that we are seeing all-time levels of terrible teams this year. The Wizards, they only had 3 more wins than Detroit. The Spurs, they only have 2 more wins than Detroit. So really, what are we talking about? Like, there's a lot of bad teams in this league right now. But it's one thing to lose, and it's another thing to lose 27 straight. And if they didn't lose 27 straight, would I still feel that way about Cade? I don't know. I can't say that I would. I can't say that I wouldn't. But the point is, they did lose the 27 straight games. And Cade has not missed a game this season. So he's been available for all this garbage basketball that Detroit Pistons have been playing. Again, I know I keep saying this, but with as talented as we believe Cade is, you would have think that he would have walked into at least one win out of those before those 27 consecutive losses piled up. Silver lining, though, I have heard Cade in interviews talk about having to improve on being able to elevate his teammates also in his in their play, because he does feel personally that he know he can do most things that he wants to do on the court. But again, a single man can't win games. And luckily for Detroit, at the close of week 10, they were able to end that streak. The streak is over, which takes me into my next bit of news, which is Detroit was able to grab their win over the shorthanded Toronto Raptors. And that was more due to them not having players available because of the trade that they made with the New York Knicks, where they agreed to send RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, and a first-round pick to Toronto for OG Anunoby, Precious Achiuwa, and Malachi Flynn. So this trade, it came out of nowhere. I don't think it was on anybody's radar. I didn't hear any talk about it leading up to the trade. And of course, after the trade, all we hear about is like, I can't believe these two teams made a trade with each other because they're technically in a lawsuit with each other that's still getting fought out in the courts. So I guess they put they pettiness aside for a little bit, got the trade done. And for fantasy, when we look at it, the biggest winner has to be Emmanuel Quickley. He moves out of a bench role with the Knicks to the Raptors as being their starting point guard. So value automatically increases because of more opportunity. Now, the Raptors, however, they've been using Scottie Barnes kind of as their de facto point guard. So I don't see Quickley all of a sudden averaging 6 or 7 assists with Toronto. But he does get more opportunity to showcase the type of scorer that he could be in a lead role. Quickley's low end to me is probably somebody like a Jordan Clarkson now that he's a starter. And his high end top out value probably would be somebody like a Tyler Hero type. As for the other big pieces involved in this trade, we have a change of scenery that may boost Barrett's potential, may boost OG Anunoby's potential. But to me, they're kind of in similar situations that they were already in. And we've already seen what it looks like when Anunoby has a coach that would love to play him all 48 minutes of a game. So Nick Nurse had him last year. He plays his players tons of minutes. He goes to Tom Thibodeau. And I don't see him playing under Thibodeau really boosting his value because, oh, Thibodeau's going to put him on the court, blah, blah, blah. We already seen that picture. For Barrett, he goes from being an outright third option to kind of sharing that role with Quickley now. But again, his role is mainly to get buckets, play some defense. The defensive part, of course, when you lose somebody like Anunoby, Barrett is not coming in and filling those shoes, but they're going to hope that he could probably step that up as his career goes. But Barrett has always been a streaky scorer. I think he continues to be a streaky scorer in Toronto. I don't really see much changing for him. On a lower level, though, you got Quentin Grimes. He should likely get a small boost, eating up some of those minutes that used to belong to Quickley. So he's a deep cut to put on your watch list to see how that pans out after the first couple weeks. But mainly the main beneficiary of this trade, especially for fantasy purposes, again, has to be Emmanuel Quickley. And he was already rostered in most fantasy leagues. So if you already have him, you just got to be thankful for the opportunity that he's going to get now with Toronto. Last bit of news that belongs to Aaron Gordon, who got bit by his pet Rottweiler. Who let the dogs out? And this guy, he admitted to the Denver Post that he got drunk, he had too much eggnog, and he was wrestling with his dog, and that's how he ended up getting bit by the dog. And hearing that story, and having a dog myself, I assumed that the dog just thought they were playing, and when they started roughhousing, the dog bit down a little too hard, because that's kind of happened to me when I've been playing tug of war with my dog or something like that. So I get it. I don't think, you know, it was never that bad where I needed stitches or anything. But it's gotten to the point where I realized that my dog's too excited and I got to reset, calm things down, make sure that the dog is treating me not as its peer, but as its master. So I assume, you know, Aragorn, like you say, you know, he was enjoying the Christmas holiday, had a little too much eggnog playing with the dog. Dog got a little too excited, carried away, bit him. But I don't think it's nothing like got to put the dog down or anything like that. I don't think nothing like he's not training his dogs well. I don't think it's anything like that. Anywho, luckily, it was not a serious injury. It was just a short-term injury. So, even though in the league chat, Tank was trying to, you know, prompt Jive Turkey to drop Aaron Gordon. It was a good try by Tank, but obviously not necessary. Now, in Week 10, we did have some other injuries that popped up. And we'll start off with DeAndre Ayton, who missed all of Week 10 with knee tendonitis. And the news dropped stating that he wouldn't be traveling with the team for their 7-game road trip. So it's possible that he catches up with the team on the second leg of the road trip. But if you're rostering DeAndre Jordan like I am, I'm not planning for him to be there. I'm planning for him to be out the entire road trip, which means the earliest that he'll be back is Sunday, January 14th, which is to close out week 12 of the fantasy season. So in his stead, Moses Brown has been getting the start, but he's been getting that Kendrick Perkins start where, you know, at the end of Kendrick Perkins' career, he started for basically the first 7 minutes of the first quarter, the first 7 minutes of the second half, and then that was about all he played. That was the end of his night. That's basically how Moses Brown has been playing. You look at the minute split, you look at the box scores for Portland, it looks like they would like to go with Duop Reith. The problem is that guy, he's also been out with back soreness since December 28th. But he is a guy, though, I would put on my watch list. You look at his history. He's a guy that went undrafted in the 2018 draft, bounced around overseas for the past 5 seasons. But he's shown some promise with Portland so far. In the 6 games where Reith has played at least 20 minutes, he's averaging 13.2 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 3-pointers made at 38%. But until Reith gets back in the lineup, the guy that's been getting the biggest boost due to this DeAndre Ayton injury is Jabari Walker, who over the last 4 games has averaged 14.5 points, 8.3 rebounds, and 0.8 steals. Dylan Brooks, he's been out since December 27th, and he's recovering from an oblique strain, his waist muscles. Obviously, it's going to be hard to guard people on the perimeter if you can't use those twitching hips and move your waist, so he'll be out for a little while as he recovers. Deshaun Tate has moved into the starting layup. Has moved into the starting lineup, but he really hasn't took advantage of the extra minutes. Tari Eason, he's the guy that you want to pay attention to. He kind of continues to carve out a role under Coach Ime Udoka. Over the last 3 games, Eason is averaging 11 points, 6 rebounds, and 3.7 steals. Anfernee Simons of Portland has been out since December 28th, and he's been out due to an illness. And when a guy starts missing close to a week due to illness, you always got to wonder if it's COVID-related. They haven't said so, and normally, since COVID has happened, normally if the illness is COVID-related, they normally state that it's COVID. I know that they, you know, were big on, you know, trying to protect people's privacy and whatnot, but lately, or at least last season, they were stating if the illness was actually COVID or not. Anyways, the point is Scoot Henderson has kind of stepped into the starting lineup since then. Over the last 3 games, he's averaged 23.5 points, 5 rebounds, 7.5 assists, 1 steal, and 3 3-pointers made at 50%. And in Charlotte, we have Gordon Hayward, who's been out since December 28th. He's out with a calf strain and has the most feared words in fantasy attached to them. And I think you guys know what I'm going to say, the dreaded reevaluated tag. I hate being reevaluated. Always think of the long end when somebody's getting reevaluated. But he'll be reevaluated in 2 weeks. So, like I said, add at least an extra week to his time frame to the return. One, because Hayward is notoriously getting injured and taking I shouldn't say that because Charlotte is one of the worst teams when it comes to reporting their injury reports. We got no real timetable for LaMelo Ball and his ankle injury. Mark Williams, he's been listed as doubtful every game for like 3 weeks now. And if you remember last season, there was this big thing where Gordon Hayward's wife got all upset because her husband's injury was reported as just being a shoulder bruise when actually he had fractured his shoulder. So I don't think it's Gordon Hayward's fault, especially with Charlotte, that we think he takes a long time to recover. I think what Charlotte does is intentionally be coy with their injury reports and underreport the seriousness of injuries. Again, LaMelo Ball, Mark Williams this season, we're seeing them do it right now with those two players. So that, on top of the fact that Hayward has been injured a lot, the fact that he's being reevaluated, all that's to say, don't expect that man to return anytime soon. He's probably a drop, honestly, and then just pay attention to the news and notes and hope that you see that he's coming back before anybody else does and then put him back on your squad. But yeah, Charlotte, when it comes to injury reporting with Charlotte, those guys are...
He's a habitual line stepper.
Exactly. Anywho, with all that going on, that means that there's been more freedom for Brandon Miller to get up shots. And with all the injuries, he's really probably like the third option now. You're probably looking at Terry Rozier as number one option, Miles Bridges number two, Brandon Miller as the third option for Charlotte. And the most recent injury is that of Zach Collins. And the reason why I'm putting it on is because we know it's already been announced that he's going to be expected to miss 2 to 4 weeks. And again, I always choose to accept the longest portion of the return time frame as truth. So I'm just saying he's going to be out for 4 weeks. The problem is with Collins, ever since Wembanyama moved to starting full-time at center, Collins' stats have declined. So in the 8 games coming off the bench, Collins has averaged 9.1 points, 5.9 rebounds, and 2 assists. If you compare that to when he was a starter, or when he plays as a starter, he's averaging 14.3 points, 6 rebounds, 3.7 assists, and 1.2 three-pointers made. So if you don't believe that Collins is going to be coming back into that starting role, holding on to him for 4 weeks seems like an unwise decision. So while you guys think on that, let's go ahead, take a quick break, and we'll be back shortly. Welcome back, and as your DHL champion, it wouldn't be regal of me if I didn't at least give mention to the bodies that had to lie down in order for me to stand tall as your champion. So thank you to OE for not dropping LeBron James in the first round. Thank you to Understanding the Assignment, not Understanding the Assignment. And thank you, of course, to Tank for just being happy to be on that stage and embracing his role as the Jared Allen character in my story as DHL champ. Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Remind Tank what happened.
Even for me, the lights were brighter than expected.
But let's go ahead, get into some league news. And we got to start off with the trade that happened. It was processed on December 26th between Ontario Elite and IAWBN. OE received Jimmy Butler, sending out CJ McCollum and Tobias Harris to, actually I'm going to shorten it for podcast or audio format, but I'm going to say Albin. So IAWBN, it makes me think of like when you try to read license plates and people got them vanity license plates and you're trying to figure out what the meaning is of the license plate or how to pronounce it correctly because all the words are jumbled up together. So I'm just going to call, I ain't worried about nothing, Albin. because I think that's probably the quickest way to do it in audio format. So we'll see how it goes. But let's go ahead, fire up the trade machine and see what we got. I personally don't like any of the players involved in this trade. Butler, he always seems to be hurt. You look at the last previous seasons for Butler, last three, he's played 52 games, 57 and 64 games. So OE, he's adding Butler to already high risk, high reward roster that he has when he's rostering Zion Williams and LaMelo Ball. And I don't want to hear at the end of the season, OE talking about, you guys would have been in trouble if Ball and Zion were healthy and they didn't get hurt. Sorry, I'm not good at impressions, but you get the point. So, nah, man, I don't want to hear that. You forfeit your right for using an injury excuse when you roster three guys that have had recent injury history over multiple seasons. All that being said, a healthy Jimmy Butler fits with just about any type of roster build that you can have in fantasy. And if OE can head into the playoffs healthy, he has a dynamic roster with four players in Tyrese Haliburton, Jimmy Butler, Zion Williams, LaMelo Ball that can all sway the outcomes of categories. And I didn't even throw in Rudy Gobert that can just go out there and get 20 rebounds and 5 blocks in one night. For Aubin, he's looking ahead with this trade, plus the likelihood of CJ McCollum. Last season he played 75 games. Tobias Harris, previous two seasons, he played 73 and 74 games, respectively. But he looks at that and he sees that the availability or the likelihood of them being available is going to be much higher than Jimmy Butler. And for as good as Jimmy Butler is, regular season Jimmy Butler is a bit inconsistent. For a guy that's a star, in a third of his games, he's been pedestrian. Out of the 24 games that Butler's played, he scored 15 or less in 7 of them. Think about that. A third of his games, he scored 15 or less. And it's not like he's getting crazy assists or rebounds in those games where he's scoring or making a low impact in scoring. His averages over those 7 games, 12.9 points, 4.3 rebounds, 4.9 assists, and 0.9 steals. Now, okay, almost 5 assists no matter what for Jimmy Butler. Those are good stats. Those are solid stats. So I'll give him that. Also, I'll give him the fact that he is knocking down 4.7 free throws made at 89% in those games when he's underperforming also. Still, even though McCollum and Tobias Harris don't have the upside that Butler has, they got the consistency on a night-to-night basis. And that makes strategizing on a weekly fantasy matchup that much easier when you know what you're going to get from a player. And you're not worried about one out of every three games, am I going to get a dud of a night? If I had to declare an instant winner and loser of the trade, I'm going to give the win to Aubin. McCollum, Tobias Harris, those guys are players that don't hurt you anywhere. They both shoot strong percentages across the board and provide slightly above league average counting stats. But my preference to me will always be having a high floor rather than the potential of no ceiling. But let me know what you think. Do you like the practicality of the trade for Aubin? Or would you rather have the chance of unlimited potential that OE probably sees on his roster? Let's move on and touch on a few quick hitters of discussion that happened in the league chat during week 10. First, let's talk about the tightness of the standings. And we'll discuss the standings in more detail later in this show. But yes, it's amazing how close these standings are halfway through the fantasy season. At this point in the year, the cream usually rises to the top. And you normally start to see separation by teams that are really just outworking their competition on a week-to-week basis. If you look at the standings, realistically, teams 1 through 12 all have a really strong chance of making the playoffs. And if I respected Swipers as a manager, he technically also has enough to make a playoff push. But as I stated in the lead chat, the standings haven't been this close midway through the season since the 2016-17 season. And while I was looking back at the history of the league with all the standings talk, I realized that we are 17 seasons in. I mean, if you would have said when we started this league in 2007 that we would be playing 17 seasons consecutively, I would have never fathomed it. But this league has kept us together. It has always been competitive. We've always had some trash talk. So the DHL is one of... I almost got lost for words there. But the DHL's got to be one of the best leagues out there in fantasy. I know I'm being biased, but it's got to be one of the best leagues out there. And for as much as Cradle, and I'm going to say WMD because really WMD hasn't dominated after changing his name from WMD. He hasn't really been dominating the league since he got confused and started changing his name every season. But Cradle and WMD, even though they dominated the league at the beginning, there's never been anybody that's pulled off a three-peat in this league. So nobody has won three consecutive champions. We've had back-to-back champions, but that was in the infancy of our league. WMD, he won the first two seasons, and then Cradle, he won seasons three and four. You know, obviously, I'm trying to be that third manager to go back-to-back in this league, so understand that. Y'all must have forgot. But I guess the overall point that I'm trying to make is three out of the last four champions have been brand new champions in this league. So I just love the way that when you look at the history, I love where this league is heading. There was also a question on the league chat about what is a rosterable player? What do I consider a rosterable player? And we have 14 teams in this league, 12 spots on each roster. That technically means if you're a top 168 player, you deserve to be on a roster. And for those that are a little slow, that's 14 times 12 to get 168 spots.
Nerd alert!
But realistically, as for attached as we are to players that are on our rosters, we all know that we would likely get more value, more fantasy stats by constantly streaming our worst player rather than sitting on them because we feel that they're just good enough that they probably don't belong on free agency. So all that's to say, a truly rosterable player probably needs to be one of your top 11 guys at least. So in a 14-team league like ours, a rosterable player would be somebody that's in the top 154. And obviously, during a long fantasy season, rankings are always fluid. Guys are moving up and down. So there will be times where you have two or three players that are probably not in the top 154. And it's okay to move off a guy when they're experiencing a slump, especially if they're at the bottom of your roster. Like, we really get too attached to guys and we don't want to drop them because we think, oh man, what if they have a game that's good and then I'm not available to pick them up. But by the time you rotate through players, it's going to break even most times. For me personally, in a perfect roster setup, I would like to be rotating through my worst two players and using those spots to just get immediate value each and every night that I got empty slots. And then for my guys that I consider like my top 10 on my roster, I'm going to treat those guys with a little bit more long-term value approach and probably hold on to one of those guys maybe a little longer than I should if they're having a slump because I'm cycling through my bottom two guys. Anywho, that's something to chew on. Food for thought, as they would say. Let's go ahead and get to these league standings that have been the subject of conversation so much in the league chat. And as we talked about previously, these standings have been some of the tightest standings that we have seen in years. And it makes me wonder, maybe I shouldn't be doing a podcast. Maybe the fact that I'm not poisoning your minds with what I think should happen in the league and what I think about players is why the play in this league is so pure this year. Hence, that's why the standings are so tight. You know, I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there. But you have to admit, this season has been unsullied, and you guys are thriving. Like everybody said, the standings have not been tighter in years. But I'm back! So, let's go ahead, take a look at these standings, and then it's going to be fun to document how these standings change while we make our way towards the fantasy playoffs. At the top of the standings, OE, they've practically been at the top of the standings for 5 weeks now, dating back to week 6. However, I do have to say, Pep and them was at the top of the standings at the close of week 9 due to the regular season tiebreaker, which is the results of the most recent matchup. So, really, OE was kind of tied for first place, but Yahoo had him in second, and if the season were to end that day, that's where he would have been for the fantasy playoffs, being in that second position. So if I'm OE, I'm saying that I was at the top of the standings for 5 weeks, but really, not really. Largest movement up, Irrelevant. He jumped up from 12th to 8th after a 10-3 blowout over El Han. But this honor, it belongs to SD, who moved up from 8th to 4th after an easy 11-2 victory over Team Proof. And I just want to shout out Irrelevant, because after a tough start to the season, this team has been really finding its rhythm and is currently on a 4-week winning streak. Largest movement down the standings, that belongs to Elhan, who dropped from 9th to 12th in the standings. It's kind of crazy when you look at his squad and the fact that he lost so badly, because his players have really been performing lately. In week 10, you got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander averaging 33.5 points, 5.3 rebounds, 6.5 assists, 1.5 steals, 1 block, and 1 three-pointer made at 39%. Alfred Sengun, the Turkish legend, 27.3 points, 9.4 rebounds, 4.7 assists, 2.3 steals. Kristaps Porzingis, 25.7 points, 9.3 rebounds, 1 steal, 1.3 blocks, and 1.7 three-pointers made. And even Malcolm Brogdon showed out in week 10, averaging 25 points, 4 rebounds, 6.3 assists, and 4.7 three-pointers made at 61%. If that was Elhan's team, you can only imagine what Irrelevant was doing in week 10. And now at the bottom of the standings, we got to look at Team Proof, who's now spent six consecutive weeks at the bottom of the standings, and that coincides with the 6 straight losses that he's had. Oh man, this guy is accumulating a very terrible season. He's only won one matchup this season, and it looks like Proof very well might be the first manager with, and I'm putting this in quotes, you can't see me, championship pedigree that will be rotated out the league. But you know what? There's still a long way in fantasy to go, but I'm feeling frisky. I'm locking that in. Proof will be rotated out the league this year. Lock it in. It's really disappointing, though, when you think about it, because you look at the history of the league and you realize that Proof has had the 4th best finishing average in the DHL with an average finish of 5.75. In 16 seasons, he's only missed the playoffs 5 times. And, okay, this is a little weird because I want to phrase historical stats correctly, and we really weren't able to complete the 2019-20 season because of COVID. But we were only 2 weeks out from starting the playoffs, and at that point in the season, Proof was in 11th place, and he was 25 games behind the 8th place team. So it's safe to say that he wouldn't have made the playoffs that season, so I'm just going to count it as he's missed the playoffs 5 times. If you want to be technical, I guess only 4 because we didn't have a playoffs in that 2019-20 season. But it's just crazy how the man has been consistently good, and then all of a sudden just drop off a cliff. And it's crazy because Proof won his championship in 2020, the 2020-21 season. He won his championship. The next season, if you remember, he was terrible. He got a gift from Cradle that pushed him into the playoffs. Now, granted, once Proof made the playoffs, he got active. He did what he needed to do. He made it to the championship. Got beat down by Cradle in the championship. But again, he was gifted a playoff spot in the 21-22 season. Then last season, Proof finishes in 11th place. And this year now, he looks like he's about to be rotated. So we have 3 seasons really where Proof's regular season now has been underwhelming. And so it's like the guy won his championship, said, hey, I'm minted. Y'all can't take that away from me. It was just like bump fantasy. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But it's been piss poor for Team Proof, to say the least. And while we're on the topic of piss poor effort, let's go ahead and get into the blowout of the week.
I'm speechless. This game was beyond embarrassing. The worst game of the season. They looked awful. You know, they didn't execute. They didn't do anything right.
It's the blowout of the week.
Before we get into it, let's go over the beatdown scale that was created to summarize the devastation of an unsurmountable loss. You start off with the 10-3. That's just your good old-fashioned mass beatdown. Then we got the 11-2. That's your run-of-the-mill prison rape. Doesn't happen all the time, but happens enough just that you know there's some truth to that stereotype. The 12-1, that gets upgraded to gang rape with Quad City DJs in the background. And then we have the 13-0, the granddaddy of them all, and that's when it gets crazy. That's the gang rape with the R. Kelly golden shower, and you just gotta kill yourself. And if you don't kill yourself, maybe, you know, we can put you on Surviving R. Kelly Part 20, because, you know, them documentaries keep coming out, so you can work on rehabilitating yourself. But in week 10, we had two blowouts. Irrelevant provided a good old-fashioned beatdown to Elhan with a 10-3 victory in the battle of SD's ex-roommates. But quick shout out to Anthony Davis, who's been hooping, playing out of his mind since the in-season tournament. And through four games in week 10, he averaged 29.8 points, 12.1 rebounds, 4.3 assists, 1.5 steals, and 3 blocks, while shooting 58% from the field on 19.3 attempts and 81% from the charity stripe on 8 attempts. And side note, it's kind of crazy how terrible the Lakers have been playing, even though AD and LeBron have been hooping. Like, I really can't put my finger on that. But to the actual blowout of the week honors, that belongs to SD with the 11-2 run-of-the-mill prison rape over Team Proof. Usually, I like to go over the statistical dominance and how the numbers would have stacked up against the rest of the league, but this matchup really wasn't that. As early as Thursday, I was able to start pulling my players and sitting them, trying to manipulate the outcome of this matchup. I was going for that ultimate goal, the granddaddy of them all, running the Boston, winning all 13 categories. You know, I was trying to send Proof out this league early. Just get him out the league, let him quit, and we could all move on. I obviously fell short, but in this matchup, and looking at Proof's season overall, in short, is this Proof, pun intended, it's Proof that the league is just that much stronger. For the longest, I would always preach, just do the minimum. If you at least set your roster week to week, you won't win in this league, like be a playoff team, but you'll at least be competitive-ish. But to be this far behind in the standings compared to the rest of the league, a team normally has to show negligence, like blatantly not set their roster in multiple matchups. And that hasn't been the case with Proof. This is a different type of negligence that we're dealing with and that Team Proof has shown. And to be fair to Proof, he's probably going through his phone, hitting the little start active players button and choosing the option to set his lineup for the week. But he's being negligent by holding on to players that just haven't had it. And not even just haven't had it, but they haven't had it for not even a couple bad games or a bad week. These guys haven't had it for months. And I'm talking about guys like Mo Wagner. Wagner's been on this guy's team since October 31st. That's 29 games that Mo has played while being on Proof's roster. How much more of a sample size do you need? Like, when are you going to get the hint? Over the span of those 29 games, Mo has averaged 11.5 points and 4.3 rebounds. Why are you not streaming that spot? And then we go on to Moses Moody. Moses Moody. But anyways, I know it. I get it. You know, Proof, you're in Oakland. You're a Warriors fan. Moses Moody is on your favorite team. But Moody, for fantasy purposes, has been on your squad since December 2nd. Playing in 11 games since that time. All you see when you look at his game log is his minutes that keep getting reduced. Then you look at the stats, and over those 11 games, he's barely playing 16 minutes a night, and he's only averaging 7.5 points and 2.8 rebounds. Like, bruh, you're in last place. This shit is not working well enough for you to hold on to guys like that. And I get it. Proof out in these real-life streets, he making money right now.
Come on, man. I mean, come on, man. Come on, man. You're making money. Come on.
Well, I don't get it because I don't make the type of money that Proof does, so I really don't understand that. But I can empathize with the fact that his attention may be elsewhere. Still, though, you could devote 15 minutes in the morning while you on a shitter, hiding from your family, trying to get some peace and quiet before the day starts. And you could check fantasy real quick, make an add and drop here or there. Or you could spend 15 minutes in the afternoon at the end of your workday when you bullshitting with the rest of your coworkers before you clock out. You can glance at your phone, double check the status of your players before that evening. The point is, as busy as we all feel, instead of stalking Instagram models on IG, we could be putting a few more minutes into fantasy. Which is, of course, what we all know is truly important in life. Get your priorities straight. In the DHL especially, the days of setting and forgetting, being enough to keep you out of last place, those days are over. We've weeded out all the complacent managers for the most part. We brought in fresh blood, and these guys are hungry to prove their worth in this league. Proof got to lock in soon if he wants to give himself a chance to not finish in last. I want to go ahead and end on a little bit of positivity here. So let's get into one of my favorite segments, the Fantasy Sleeper of the Week. Oh yeah. You know what time it is. Let the sweet, dulcet sounds of my voice breeze through your ears. And as we get into your mind, relax you, get you ready for the fantasy week, let's enjoy what these sleepers did for you in week 10. We start out in Indiana with Benedict Mathurin. He's rostered in 47% of leagues. And Haliburton, he's been throwing these gaudy assist numbers out, and he's got to be throwing these assists to somebody. And Mathurin, he was one of those players. He was hot in week 10. In three games, he averaged 15 points, 2 3-pointers made at 46%, while shooting 54% from the field on 9.3 attempts and 90% from the charity stripe on 3.3 attempts. Staying in Indiana, we look at Aaron Naismith. He's rostered in 32% of leagues. And Haliburton, like I said, he's making a lot of folks look good. And in week 10, Naismith was no exception to the rule. He averaged 15.7 points, 4.33 points made at 62%, while shooting 54% on the field on 9.3 field goal attempts. We move east, going out to Philly with Kelly Oubre, the Tsunami Poppy, rostered in 46% of leagues. And I gotta say, he provided a tsunami of stats in week 10. In four games, he really helped out Philadelphia in the absence of Joel Embiid. And Oubre, he averaged 13.3 points, 4.3 rebounds, and 2.5 three-pointers made at 46%. But what I truly appreciate from Oubre was the defensive stats, where he averaged 1.3 steals and one block also. Going back to what I consider the Midwest, we look at Caris LeVert out in Cleveland. He's rostered in 43% of leagues. And he needs to improve his percentages. But those counting stats, all those counting stats were fire. He averaged 17.5 points, 5.5 assists, and 3 3-pointers made at 35% in two games. Up north, we the north. In Toronto, Gary Trent, he's rostered in 38% of leagues. And he kind of jumped back into that fantasy time machine and produced like the player that made him a draftable prospect, giving fantasy managers elite threes and elite steals. Trent averaged 14 points, 2.7 steals, and 3.3 three-pointers made at 48% in three games. Oh, we can't leave out the South and Derrick Jones Jr., the high flyer, the human pogo stick. He's only rostered in 20% of leagues. And this season, he's really muscled away minutes that were kind of earmarked for Grant Williams. And in four games, in week 10, he produced 14.3 points, 5.6 rebounds, 1.8 steals, 1.3 blocks, and 1 3-pointer made. You know I love these guys out the free agency that can provide that good, good triple one. That's at least one steal, 1 3, and 1 block. But of course, we can only have one winner. And that's in Chicago, Chi-Town, holding it down. Alex Caruso, the bald eagle. This guy can't seem to stay healthy this season, but when he's on the court, he's a must-roster type of player. in three games, he averaged 13.3 points, 4.6 rebounds, 4 assists, 1.3 steals, and 2.3 three-pointers made at 41%. So again, Alex Caruso, you are the fantasy sleeper of the week.
It's your fantasy sleeper of the week.
Damn, once again, man, I have to say, shout out to Proof. When you get rotated from the league, remember that you will always live on with the Fantasy Sleeper of the Week instrumental. I appreciate that, man. Let's go ahead and get out of here. As always, I appreciate you guys spending some of your day listening to me talk about fantasy hoop, listening to me talk about basketball. This has been an amazing season thus far. Let's keep it going. We out.
Well, I mean, I wake up in the morning, I piss excellence, and nobody can hang with my stuff. You know, I'm just a big, hairy American winning machine. If you ain't first, you're last. You know what I'm talking about? That phrase, trademark, not to use the other tradition, Ricky Bobby.
Yeah, first and last, baby, you know it!
Eat your ass up on the MIC if you keep messing with me.